And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means today is the day I get to find out where I'm going to travel for 4 to 5 months during the season. Of course, the NFL releases their schedule today. We're going to discuss that, break that down a little bit here with our pal Matt Parrish from The Washington Times. We'll get to Matt in a sec, but I gave Matt a quick project here. He's got to give us one word to describe his first impression of the schedule. Matt, that word is?
Daunting.
I think daunting is a word I used in the story I wrote. That's a good one. All right, we'll get to that in a sec. In addition, there's a lot going on in this episode. One, I spoke with Commander's sixth-round pick, Chris Rodriguez. So just we have a chance to catch up with him, how he's feeling coming into, obviously, a really exciting time for him coming into this team, how he fits in with the offense, and a little bit about who he is. In addition, because there was some news this week in the ownership situation, I thought I would get my colleague at The Athletic, Dan Kaplan, to give us his insight into what is going on as well. So a lot to get to here on the podcast, which, of course, you can subscribe to on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Also, make sure to check out The Athletic, the website itself. If you have not yet subscribed, definitely encourage you to do so. I think we're still running a $1.99 a month deal, or it's a low price for the whole year. I can't even keep track. We always have some sort of deal. So go check that out. And of course, we'll have a lot of coverage. Rookie minicamp starts on Friday. So we will talk about that on the site as well. All right, so let's just jump into here to the schedule. Of course, you can find Matt at the Washington Times and on Twitter at Matthew_Paris. I am at Ben Standing. All right, well, Matt, look, the schedule, if nothing else, is fun. It's you know, it's not a negative. I mean, we'll find things to, if we were the Commanders, probably to be a little bit weirded out by or whatever. But it's a schedule. We now have an order. And you know, we're going to share that with the world here in a bit and share our insights right now. You mentioned the word daunting. I mean, we already knew, of course, we know who the opponents were, right? That's not the new part. And I think I saw at least one of the strength of schedule lists out there that said Washington had the eighth toughest schedule this year. As we know, these things are, you know, can full fluctuate, of course, over the course of the year because of injuries or teams going up or down, better or worse than people thought. But we knew it would be tougher in that regard. The real question is, how does the order of it shake out? So you mentioned daunting. I guess what part for you is the daunting? Is it just the opponents, or is there something about the actual order that's daunting?
Yeah, I think it's the order. It's specifically after week six. You're starting with the New York Giants. In that six-week span, you have four NFC East opponents or NFC East games, and then you also have cross-country flights from New England to Seattle on the 5th and the 12th of November. So that's a very tough stretch for them. That could decide the division.
Plus, in that stretch, they are playing – the big game of the year is they're playing on Thanksgiving at Dallas.
Yes.
Which means that one of those weeks is a short week to boot. So,
yeah. No, and it's really weird. Like, after that, that's kind of like the murderer's row, I think. But after that, they host the Dolphins for December 3rd. But because there's a 10-day break after the Dallas game, the Thanksgiving game, then you get to the Dolphins. Then they have their bye week, and then – they play again on the 17th, right? So in a span of 22 games from the end of the Cowboys game up into the night before, They play whoever they play on the 17th off the top of my head. I don't remember.
It's at the Rams.
At the Rams. They have one game in 22 days. That's nuts.
That is a bit peculiar. I was saying, I can't believe they have a week 14 bye again for the second straight year. That seems insane. But to your point, at least this time, they have, it's almost like a double bye because of the Thursday to game, and then against the Dolphins 10 days later. So yeah, they have a lot of rest there. We'll see. Obviously, we'll see how it all unfolds and whether that matters. Between injuries, are they still in contention? You mentioned after week six that it is daunting. From week 7 to 13 is a tough schedule. Here's what I would say. I'm going to say this. I think weeks 1 to 6 are the most important part of the entire schedule because this team has started off terribly.
Yes.
In every year under Ron Rivera, right? Now, we know about the midseason rally, and they've done that every time. I would say that if you rank the opponents, it's probably out there in some list of at least my projections, I should say, of the opponents from best to worst, I think arguably the three worst teams that they're going to face, Arizona Cardinals in week one at FedEx Field. This will be the first game, we think, that does not involve Dan Snyder as the owner, and against an opponent it's kind of a lousy opponent. They are probably the team that everybody's going to pick to have the first pick in the draft next year. But also they don't have much of a fan base that's going to like raid the stadium. So that should be fun from that perspective. Should be a chance for everybody to come out who wants to sell the place out, all that. But then then week five, Bears on Thursday night. So those are the two national games, Bears in week five, Thursday, and Dallas on Thanksgiving. I can't believe Amazon agreed to do another Commanders Bears game on Thursday, but okay. I'm sure
Michaels is going to sit that one out.
Yeah, no doubt. But okay, again, look, I get it. Justin Fields may improve. The Bears had a lot of additions this offseason, but nonetheless, they're going to be projected to be one of the worst teams in the league. And then the following week, this is maybe a little unfair because Atlanta won 7 games last year. But, you know, it's still Desmond Ridder at quarterback. It's sort of the same vein as Sam Howell. We don't quite know what to make of them. That game week 6 is at Atlanta. If they don't go at least 3-3 in that stretch, I think they're screwed because of what you just laid out. Because after that, it's at Giants, Philadelphia, at New England, at Seattle, Giants, Dallas, at Dallas on Thanksgiving, Miami, and then the bye week. So, if you want to tell me the Rams are one of their three worst teams they'll face, maybe. They obviously still have Aaron Donald and Cooper Kupp and Stafford and all that and Sean McVay, but that's not till at least later anyway. So I think if they don't go at least 3-3 in those first 6 games, I think they're in big trouble at a minimum.
I completely agree. I mean, you think back to 2019 when Jay Gruden got the axe in the first 5 weeks from going 0-5. I mean, it's way too premature to be talking about that, but I mean, that's kind of how slow they've started under Rivera. You know, they have the enemy in the wings, kind of. Jack Del Rio has been a head coach before, so you know, you hate to be talking about these things so early at the moment the schedule comes out, but you know, this is the type of pressure I think is going to be on Ron Rivera this year in a make or break year.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if they start off slow, even if people want to say, well, we know they're going to rally because that's how they do things, new ownership might be like, we're not into that. So hard pass. I mean, we don't care. We, you know, let's just get this going. Secondly, like, let's just say Sam Howell is the week one starter. Again, nice soft landing spot in theory against the Cardinals. Then it's at Denver. Just historically, obviously, road games at Denver are tough. It's now Sean Payton. Ooh, we get the Sean Payton, Ron Rivera game in week 2. And then the Buffalo Bills here are either the Bills or the Eagles are arguably the best team they're going to face this year. And then it is at the Eagles before that Bears game. So those weeks 2 through 4, I mean, you got to win at least one, I would say. And assuming you beat Arizona, then you're 2-2 at that point. But yeah, you could be looking at, you know, I can't even comprehend losing to Arizona. So let's just put that out. But you could be looking at 1-3 entering that Bears Falcons scenario. So, and I was going to say, if Sam Howell is your starter and you're 1-2, 1-3, do you stay with that? Maybe under normal circumstances, you would say, well, we're going to let the young guy play it through. Will this coaching staff feel comfortable doing that, knowing the possibility that, you know, they could be on the hot seat? So, yeah, I think that first 6 weeks is really going to be telling. Right, let me ask you this. So if you're a fan, because fans ask sometimes, where would you recommend they go? What do you think is the fan game here? I mean, putting aside Dallas on Thanksgiving, obviously, I think that would be a lot of fun for tradition's sake. What's the game here that you're looking at, both from the travel standpoint, maybe the weather, the impact of the game, the opponent, whatever it is? What's the game for you that you like?
Well, Virginia, you know, has nice winters, but a December 17th trip right after the bye to Los Angeles, I'm going to be looking forward to that one.
I'm not, no lie there. And by the way, like after that game, it's Christmas Eve at the Jets, which means if you're New York, being in New York for Christmas is a pretty cool thing to do. That's going to be a pretty cool thing to do. So you'd have that opportunity for sure. By the way, I didn't say it. Well, I'll just go through it here. So after those two games, the last two, should they be in the playoff mix at that point? Tough finish. San Francisco on New Year's Eve, and then Dallas. We don't have a date yet. I guess a potential flex situation, but Dallas is the Week 18 game again here for the second straight year. So that's a pretty tough finish. Should that matter? But you're right about the Rams game. It's hard to not look.
Can I give you a sneaky October 15th against Atlanta one? I think Atlanta's underrated city. Had a great time the last time we went. But, if Taylor Heinicke is starting that Falcons game, that's a fun one to go to. But that would require the Falcons to lose complete faith in Desmond Ridder, which I don't know is going to happen by week six.
Or there's an injury, which is what happened the last 2 years here, right? That Taylor Heinicke got in. And I, in my story that'll be up in Athletic, one of the questions we had to answer was, what's the game where the opponent looks tougher, better than they did the last time they faced? And I went with Atlanta just because the Falcons added a bunch of new pieces. They get Bijan Robinson. And I said, yes, they also have Taylor Heinicke. And, you know, one way or another, he's going to play in this game. I don't know how it's going to happen. Somehow he's playing in this game.
Now, if Atlanta wins, does he have to buy Washington sneakers, or does he just use the ones that he probably had?
Well, you're right. I don't know. That's a good question. Does he already have burgundy and gold Jordans? I don't know. Good bit. You know what? He's creative, though. Something tells me he might switch it up to something else. I don't know what that would be, but, have we ever asked as a media group? Sometimes we get the coach. Very rarely we get the starting quarterback. Is this one where we ask for the backup quarterback if he is the backup?
Even if he doesn't play, right. I would do that. I love a conference.
I think he would be down. I think he would be down for that as well. I mentioned the eighth toughest schedule projections. Now, that's, of course, based on records from the previous year, which, you know, as we know, it can be very hit or miss depending on on a lot of variables. But the quarterbacks, that's typically, if we're talking from the eye test, that's where this is going to look, where you're really going to get a probably better feel for what you're about to face. 2021 was a ridiculous quarterback schedule. Mahomes, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. I mean, I know they won some of those games or whatever, but like, you know, and tons more. I mean, it was a ridiculous schedule. Last year was a bit the opposite. You had Rodgers and Kirk Cousins, and of course the division opponents, and Jalen Hurts at that point became a noted quarterback. This year, I think, is somewhere in the middle. You've got a couple at the top, namely Josh Allen again and Jalen Hurts. And then at the bottom, I guess if you want to say with Arizona week one, you're probably looking at Colt McCoy because Kyler Murray is hurt. And, you know, I'll let you debate what you think of Mac Jones or something like that. I just think that the middle is pretty thick. When you're talking about, Dak Prescott twice, Daniel Jones twice, maybe Russell Wilson rebounds, but I'll put him at least in the middle this year. You know, Tua Tagovailoa, hopefully he's healthy for his own sake and for Miami's sake, but he's another one. You know, Matthew Stafford would be in the top tier if healthy. Maybe he will be, but I'm sort of questionable after last year and where he is in his career. And then, of course, like the Niners, is Brock Purdy starting? Even if he is last year real or a fluke? So I think I don't think it's as daunting, as I said, as 2021, but there's not a lot of like, wow, that's an obvious game where the quarterback is not very good, or a game where the quarterback is going to be a ridiculously hard task.
Well, it also just matters on what Washington is getting from their own quarterback situation. It's much easier to, face a middle-of-the-road quarterback play if your quarterback can replicate something close to that. I mean, a Powell or Jacoby Brissett, don't perform adequately, then it's going to be a long year.
It will be a long year. All right. Well, look, as I said, schedule day, once we get the schedule, it's a fun time to figure it out. And I can't wait to map this out for my own sanity in a little bit here. While I had to have you here really quick, rookie minicamp is on Friday. We found out today that Quan Martin will not be attending. He's got some personal matter to deal with. And the team said, give me an excuse absence to go take care of that. Otherwise, all these guys will be out there. Anybody that for you, you're curious to see how they perform or what they look like or anything along those lines, even if it's an undrafted guy, because, obviously those guys are interesting as well. But is there anybody that you're kind of, excited to hear about at least when over the weekend?
Can I say no?
You can.
I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how Forbes does once they start playing 11 on 11. They're not going to do that in camp, but I want to see his ball skills up close. I don't know. Chris Rodriguez, we can plug your podcast. He seems like an interesting pick. The edge rushers are both pretty long and have potential there. So, it's an interesting class, but there's no one that, like, when Dwayne was picked, it was obvious, let's go see Dwayne, let's go see the quarterback. Even a few years ago with Jamin Davis, like, there's just nothing that jumps off the page to me, and that's perfectly okay. This roster, I think, is on a spot that I think can afford a draft class like that. It's just not super sexy, but that's totally okay.
I will just say that, like, this is not, no matter what we're all are tweeting or writing about, don't get crazy in any direction, except that I will say this is sometimes the first impression is the right one. Like, for example, last year, Jahan Dotson was sharp from the jump and he never really faded the whole time. Even when the veterans came and the game turned real. I also remember when Josh Dotson was the first pick and it was our chance to really sort of talk to him in person, and pretty quickly I was like, I think there's a problem here. I don't know how much he's into this. And obviously that played out as well. So, sometimes some of that comes across, and this is more about, I would say, like, athletic traits than anything else. Obviously most of the people who are going to be on the field are not going to be on the team. Some won't even be on the 90 man roster. So I don't need Emmanuel Forbes to have a pick six. That would be fun though. But it would be good to see him look like the guy out there that you're like, okay, I can see when he has to guard top receivers, that I see the traits, I see the instincts, things like that. So I would just leave it at that. But yeah, I Forbes will be the one for me probably as well.
Yeah, I don't recall Jahan Dotson's breakout last year because I had COVID during minicamp, so I was not there.
Oh, well, then, I'm sure I said he was going to be the team leader in touchdowns after watching that rookie minicamp. I'm sure I said that. All right, Matt, to give you the Howard Stern, you've said it all. Go follow Matt on Twitter at Matthew_Paris, read him at the Washington Times, and appreciate the time as always. I'm excited to discuss our travel schedules here.
I know, I have to start booking some things here.
I'm ready, let's go. Oh, okay, so now we'll do this. I'll go with Dan Kaplan, because obviously the ownership deal is what people are most interested in, and then we'll get to my interview with Chris Rodriguez. We'll do that now here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, it's Wednesday evening. We are here talking about the latest on the Dan Snyder, Josh Harris, trying to come up with an agreement, an official agreement to sell the Washington Commanders. And here with to help us explain where we are right now in this process is our sports business writer at The Athletic, Dan Kaplan. Dan, you and I spoke last on this podcast at the owners' meeting. Some things have changed, but I imagine probably we're not as far along as I know a lot of the fans who are anxiously awaiting some resolution here would like. I appreciate the time to let us know where you have us at. You have a story that was up today on The Athletic that I encourage everyone to read about it. But I guess this first off, what's your worldview right now of where things stand with Josh Harris trying to buy this team?
Well, I recall when we talked last, it was in the parking lot of the Biltmore Hotel in Arizona.
A little bit different surroundings compared to then.
Yeah, now we're in our homes back east. So Josh Harris was always the front runner, and he has this non-exclusive agreement that he submitted to the league last month, which is by itself a pretty unusual step. It's not usually the seller and buyer reach an agreement. It's exclusive. They sign it. They submit it to the league. That's not what's been going on here, in part because Snyder's so uncooperative with the league. Harris needs to take charge. The problem so far with the Harris bid is that it relies heavily on borrowing above the NFL limit. And I can get to the details of that in a second. And there's a large number of limited partners, including those from outside the country, which just means there'll be even more vetting that needs to be done. So there are a number of hurdles in front of this deal that a lot of people who were celebrating last month when the news came out that the Harris bid was going to the NFL probably didn't expect.
Yeah, I mean, I think because it's the Dan Snyder situation, I never assume much, but even I was like, all right, well, I mean, Josh Harris has, he owns our two teams. He's got a lot of money and assets. He's got a bunch of partners now. And, you know, since then we have learned the names of several of these partners. We already knew about Mitchell Rales, of course, who is the number two investor, partner in the situation. We knew about Magic Johnson, but just in the last few days, a guy like Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, whose net worth, according to Bloomberg or the internet, at least, is like $18 billion. And there's a lot of other names who have a lot of money. And it seems like, therefore, this shouldn't be that big of a deal. Explain to everybody why that actually doesn't matter. We don't add up the net worth of these people to put this over the finish line, and why, therefore, it has been a bit of a struggle, perhaps, here for Josh Harris to get this over the line.
Well, the net worth is all good, well and good, but it depends how much they're putting in. If Eric Schmidt's putting in $200 million, it doesn't matter that his net worth is $18 billion. They need to get to a certain amount of equity. The way the NFL works is they allow the owners to borrow $1.1 billion against the franchise, so they can borrow it and it's secured against the value of the franchise, and it's can be paid back from revenue from the franchise. What Harris is proposing doing, because he's got to narrow that gap between $1.1 billion. And the $6.05 billion purchase price, he's trying to fill that in first with some extra borrowing against his other sports teams, the 76ers, the Devils, and maybe his interest in Crystal Palace. And he's also amassed this large group of limited partners. Now, the limited partner group, it does not exceed the cap the NFL has, which is 25. There's roughly 16 or 17 limited partners. That's still a large group by NFL standards, and it will take a heck of a lot of vetting. And they're going to go through these people with a fine tooth comb, not just financially, but personally. They want to make sure there are no red flags, drug use, things like that.
And just to be clear, 17 people. This is why Jeff Bezos, of course, was so interesting beyond who he is, that he's a one person bid. He doesn't, I mean, maybe he would have other people if just for whatever reason, just for fun almost, but he doesn't need anybody else. And that's why going with a guy like that would have been so appealing for the league, because you don't have to deal with as many hurdles as they're looking like they are right now.
Yeah, Snyder certainly didn't roll out the welcome wagon for Bezos. So he's left that out early.
No. So a lot of interesting things in your story. I want to get to one aspect here in particular. Now, the assumption, of course, is that get this deal done, and that is it for Dan Snyder. No longer affiliated with this organization, no longer attached to it. Josh Harris, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But you wrote in your story that this deal is so unusual that it may end up breaking the mold for what an NFL franchise sale is usually all about, which you noted, of course, that if they're willing to move some goalposts around, that is a sign of how much the league wants to get rid of Dan Snyder, which I think a lot of people could understand. But you have in here in your story, I'm reading from your story, there is the possibility of an unprecedented conditional approval allowing more debt than is standard, and the prospective soon-to-be ex-owner extending a loan to the Harris Group to get the deal over the finish line. Wait, are we saying, I think what you're saying is that Dan Snyder, to get this done, could give Josh Harris a loan. What does that mean? Is Dan Snyder still therefore going to be part of this group? Or what does that mean?
Well, if it's a loan, it's seller financing, which is not unprecedented, and it's probably a term in which it has to be paid back. When I heard that, I asked someone close to Harris, look, I thought Snyder was dragging his feet. I thought he didn't want to sell the team, and the response is he does want to sell the team. And so that was one illuminating element of that I took away from it, that Snyder does want out, so much so that he's willing to put in a little bit of money to make it happen. So it'd be different if this could, just theoretically, if he wanted to stay in as an equity partner. And in that way, if he say he stayed in at 15%, that would be 15% less equity that Harris has to come up with, and would probably solve a lot of his problems. But I can't imagine the NFL owners being content to have Dan Snyder still in their midst.
Right. And, you know, this is not my world is figuring out who's going to be on the 53 player roster, not heavy financing. So a lot of this I'm trying to process on my own here. I asked you this earlier off before we started, but I'll ask it here. Okay. So if Josh Harris, and it's so weird to see billionaires struggle to come up with this money the way, like when I was like a 22 year old trying to figure out, you know, can I get 10 bucks to eat dinner at Taco Bell tonight? I know this is not the exact same thing, but it feels like that's where we're at right now. They're looking under every couch cushion to figure out how to get this over the top. Why not? I know people wouldn't like to hear this, but why not? Or could you, or would you think this is conceivable for Josh Harris to ultimately say, hey, here's the deal. I'll buy 90% of the team. We have the money for that. We can square the financing away, all whatever the parameters are. And Dan Snyder keeps 10%. That seems like that would get this over the line, but it would also, and I threw out 90%. I don't know what the number would be.
It could also be a different member of Snyder's family could keep a percent. They'd have to be willing to do that. I mean, hypothetically, it would work. To step back a minute to why this is coming up now, the exponential rise in values of NFL franchises is driving this. Before last year, the top price for an NFL franchise was, I believe, $2.275 billion by Dave Tepper, hedge fund titan, in 2019. Then last year, the Denver Broncos sold for $4.65 billion, and they were bought by members of the Walton family, which have gazillions of dollars from Walmart. And then there's this one, which is going for $6 billion. Now, Josh Harris is wealthy, but he's not that wealthy. That's why he needs all these LPs and the borrowing. And this has been the concern for some time, that the NFL would need to change its rules to accommodate this new reality. They did raise their debt limit from $600 million to $1.1 billion, but they don't allow private equity. They don't allow borrowing against private equity. I had been told at one point Harris had proposed borrowing against his private equity firm, Apollo, and he's not doing that. So at one point, I'm told he went to the league, this was early on, seeing if there was some way he could finagle private equity into it, and he was turned down. So if this deal did implode, I think the league would really have to do a hard look at its rules on ownership. One thing I was thinking of is why they cap it at $1.1 billion? Perhaps it should be a percentage. The debt should be a percentage of the equity price. Why should it be $1.1 billion of debt for a $4.6 billion deal, and it's $1.1 billion for a $6 billion deal? Shouldn't it be a percentage of the debt? And that way you could add more debt.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly makes some sense there. And I agree with you. I think coming out of this, a bigger story perhaps for you or your those in your industry, your world there, the idea of like what the NFL rules are for buying these teams, because it's only getting, it's going to get crazier. The last two ownership sales went to the Walton family, who own Walmart and are one of the richest families in the world. And then David Tepper, the Panthers' new owner, who, you know, has gobs of money as well, even beyond what we're talking about here. And if that's what we're, if that's the new normal going forward, then you're talking about, you know, very, 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 very few people who can even afford to do this solo. And then that becomes more interesting or more challenging going forward. But to go back to this Washington, as I'm listening to myself talk about this, I don't want to sound overly alarmist. I mean, people I've talked to, I think people are still expecting this thing to go forward, and maybe this is just a lull in the action and they're trying to figure out how to get forward here. Where are you at right now with the idea of this thing actually being in jeopardy, you know, at all?
Well, there, since my story came out, the Washington Post reported at the Finance Committee meeting today, the it wasn't received very well, according to the Washington Post, the Harris offer, which is strongly what I was suggesting in my story, that there were concerns, there were issues with the deal, from debt to LPs, things like limited partners, things like that. The Washington Post story painted a troubling picture. I mean, I think they said that they had more concerns coming out of it than going in. That's troubling. So hopefully they get this together, and maybe they take up your idea of keeping some Snyder in with some equity to shave off the cash need, the cash outlay need. But this is, you know, a month ago or a few weeks ago, people were considering this a slam dunk, no problem. It was going to fly through. It's just not the case.
No, certainly not. I think everybody's learned, getting a lesson in how these things go down. And I think, so today on Wednesday, there was a meeting with the Finance Committee, but the big meeting that everybody's been kind of anticipating that's taking place in Minneapolis is the 22nd.
23rd, yeah.
So, yeah, of May. The one thing that the Post had in there as well that I think your story was kind of getting to as well is, if everybody's been like, we've constantly been pushing the goalpost back, right? There was originally, hey, this will, you know, could get done by the owners meeting, maybe even before the owners meeting. And then it was, well, okay, now at the owners meeting, maybe they'll have a conversation. Maybe it'll be a couple weeks after the owners meeting. And now we're, you know, a ways since then. And I guess the sense was, is from the Post story and a little bit, I think from where you are as well, is that this meeting in Minneapolis, they just may not be able to even get enough momentum to whatever, have any kind of a vote or even a robust discussion about the bid. What's your view of that? And where would you put the timeline of this at this point, well, look, as best you can?
Even a week ago when the story came out that the NFL was considering a staged approval. When I first heard this, I was like, what's a staged approval? I mean, I asked investment bankers. They didn't know what the hell I was talking about. This has never been done before. It underscores how much the NFL wants Snyder out. But the concept was they would take the preliminary, they would take Harris's bid, even though it wasn't agreed to by Snyder, signed by Snyder, and they would put it up for a vote to owners. And then if the owners voted for it, it would be a strong message. It essentially would be a stalking horse, a message to Snyder to say, we have enough votes to vote you out, so agree to this deal. But the problem is, if the deal doesn't meet NFL standards and doesn't, and they have to stretch the guidelines to the point of breaking, that's a whole nother issue. And a lot of the owners are going to be uncomfortable with that. And so if they can't even get it by the Finance Committee, it's certainly not going to full ownership.
Okay, so I hear people right now, as they're listening to this, I don't know if they're throwing their remote controls across the room. I don't know if they're, you know, just angrily just screaming into the void. What do you tell people, you know, if I make you go from business writer to therapist, what do you tell people right now who are anxiously awaiting this to go down, to move on from the Dan Snyder era, and it's already been a few weeks? What are maybe some of the things to look at here going forward that to keep an eye on as to perhaps as a guide to what may happen next?
Well, the words of soothing words would be, look, the NFL is doing everything it can to make this deal happen. They accepted Harris's offer through non-traditional channels. They've reviewed it. I mean, this has gone through, it's a non-exclusive offer, not signed by the owner, and it's in front of the finance committee. That's unheard of. That shows you the NFL is willing to bend over backwards to try to make this happen. So maybe they'll let Harris borrow heavily against his sports team assets. They'll let Snyder do a seller financing. But I mean, the Washington Post story wasn't promising, though. I mean, it certainly suggested the members of that owners committee weren't willing to bend the rules as much as Harris might hope.
All right. Let me get to another topic here that is also a little concerning. It feels like from the outside, everything we're talking about is just buying the franchise as it stands. That includes FedEx Field. The assumption has been that they're going to build a new stadium. We've talked about that for several years now. Obviously, Dan Snyder was trying to do that prior to looking to sell the team. And we've all discussed DC, Maryland, Virginia, whatever that may be. But in order to do this, it's going to cost legit money. I mean, a lot of money to build a state-of-the-art stadium. How concerning is it that if Josh Harris and his group are struggling to some degree to get to the finish line here, that even if they are able to do that, I know it may be a little bit hard to speculate, but is it concerning that maybe they don't have the financing to do what the stadium could be, what, $2 billion or more dollars? What's your, and that's just that. I mean, there's probably other things to consider. There's, you know, the practice facility as well. How concerning is it that we're here struggling to get to the bid, and that you still have these other expenses down the line?
Well, it'd be really concerning, and it's probably why the finance committee isn't willing to bend the rules greatly. This is the NFL do not want cash poor owners. They want owners who can put up, you know, $200 million bonus to guarantee let me step back. They want owners who can put up $120 million bonuses, build stadiums, build training facilities, have a first-class operation. Now, you presume Harris would provide that, but if he's scraping the nickels together to get this deal done, what does he have left over for the rest? It's in 2016, the NFL had a special LA committee to decide which team got to relocate to LA. And the LA committee recommended the Chargers and the Raiders, and the full ownership went against them. It was almost unprecedented to spurn a committee vote. And the reason was that Stan Kroenke, who owns the Rams and got the relocation nod, had the money to build a new stadium. They were willing to bend their rules to get Stan Kroenke to LA. And of course, he spent, I think it was $5 billion to build SoFi Stadium. So the NFL is well aware of, you know, the need that it's not just having the team, it's being able to build everything around the team. So I'm not saying the deal is not going to happen, but there are concerns.
Now, okay. So as we recall, at the time that Josh Harris submitted a bid, so did the group led by Canadian billionaire Steve Apostolopoulos. And we also had heard the idea of possibly a mystery bidder out there. We know that Tillman Fertitta, the Houston Rockets owner, explored it, made a bid, but he's moved on. And we know Jeff Bezos the same. What about that component? If Josh Harris is struggling, I haven't heard anything about these other groups. Would that infer that the league is really trying to get Harris done, or is that, look, these groups may be interested, but there's not enough of a player for the league to pivot that way?
Well, the league is clearly trying to make the Harris bid work. If they were trying to make the other bids work, they'd be working with those bids. I'm not privy to their bids, but there's talk that if Harris has problems with the funding, they do too, if not more so. So This is the problem when you have a $6 billion price and you have people who are worth, you know, $2, $3, $4 billion. It's not, and you can only borrow $1 billion for the purchase. It becomes a problem, and that's what we're up against. That's what the situation is right now.
I mean, this is so ironic in a certain sense, because when Dan Snyder originally bought the team, he was a limited partner. It was Howard Milstein, the lead. He eventually, his financing was deemed not credible or whatever the term was in the moment, and that led the league to pivot to Dan.
Milstein was a real estate investor, and his assets were considered illiquid. And so that was the concern at the time. That's what brought Snyder in. And in fact, his LPs borrowed against their own personal businesses. I think Mort Zuckerman owned the Daily News. He borrowed against the Daily News to help fund the purchase. So here we are again with a prospective buyer of the team looking to fund it in part with off their backs of his personal business.
Right. So to that end, and I don't want to, like, again, I'm still operating under the approach that this will somehow get done with Josh Harris, but I don't know, for you, is there a point in time where this thing goes on for another 2 weeks, a month, longer, where it's like, okay, is there somebody, hey, let's pivot. I don't know. Is there somebody else with this in this limited partnership group who may have the wherewithal and decide they want to be in charge? I'm not saying you would know that at this point, but I'm just asking, does there become a point in time where the league may have to say, hey, Josh, we have tried, but we can't keep waiting forever here?
That could happen. It could happen. I mean, we'll know more after the Minneapolis meeting. If they're all quiet about the deal and don't want to talk about it and it's not on the agenda, that will be a message that, you know, things have somewhat gone off the tracks. So, you know, you mentioned Schmidt, the Google, former Google CEO. I mean, could he step in? You know, maybe. I have no information on that, but could Bezos suddenly come back into the picture? Look, the Harris bid is not dead by any means. Right. The league is trying to make it. I think the league wants to make it work, but it has some holes.
For sure, and you know, one of the appeals with Josh Harris, of course, is that he's already owns two teams, an NBA team and an NHL team. He's been a limited partner with the Steelers, an EPL team. He's of this world. He's gone through these situations. Hiring coaches, firing coaches, dealing with things that owners deal with, that's a nice thing. But, you know, you want somebody with experience, not a rookie, and pretty much everybody else who would be part of this group would largely be that. So that's a whole other story. I'm sure I've already set off too many alarms here for people. Not intentional. We're trying to figure out what to make sense of this. I would encourage everyone to go read Dan's story from earlier today. And as he pointed out, the Washington Post had an update this afternoon, so you can go check that one out as a companion piece. Anything else? I mean, I feel like I said, I've been like, I don't know if I'm being overly alarmist, but it does feel like this is a little more concerning. I still would guess this gets done with Harris, because like you said, the league seems to be trying to, but yeah, it's there's nothing ever easy in the Dan Snyder era. Even the selling of the Dan Snyder.
We haven't even talked about the indemnification issue. He's still right out there. He's still, and that's a league Snyder issue. He wants to be indemnified against future legal issues that might stem from the Mary Jo White report.
Right. What's your sense of that? I mean, I know when we were at the owners' meeting, you know, Jim Irsay said, this isn't something we've ever, whatever limited scope of indemnification, fine, but not this broad one that maybe Dan Snyder was looking for. What's your sense of that? Do you think the league is willing to budge on that, or is that a major step, a sticking point in and of its own right at this stage?
Well, I'm sure they can compromise. I mean, if it came down to limited indemnification to get the deal over the finish line, I'm sure the league might go for that. I mean, anything to be rid of this albatross. But in terms of a widespread indemnification of Snyder for all the scandals, I don't see the league doing that. And if anything, learn from him.
Right. And you mentioned the Mary Jo White report. Like, you know, we're way, way over a year at this point since it started. I think the Washington Post reported a month or so ago that Dan Snyder has been at this stage unwilling to meet with Mary Jo White. I don't suspect that would change, but almost on some level, like, I've kind of assumed that they're going to wait on releasing this report. They said they will do it, but they will wait until the deal is done and then go from there. But I mean, at some point, how long can you wait for that as well? I'm not saying you have to answer that, but that's another component here. When does this thing become too long?
Well, it's been 14 months since she, you know, was tasked to do the report. And there, you know, I'm not saying the issues were simple, but one was, did he keep revenue back from the other owners by masking concert revenues? I mean, you'd think that it wouldn't take 14 months to go through the books and figure that out. And the other was that he had made untoward advances towards a female employee, Tiffany Johnston. I would hope it wouldn't have to take 14 months to get their side of the stories and witnesses and who was where when. But I mean, it certainly seems like they're holding the report back to put pressure on Dan.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, well, look, we knew this wouldn't be a straight line when this started, even when we heard that Josh Harris and Dan Snyder had come to an agreement in principle. It certainly has not been that, and we will see where we go. Follow Dan on Twitter at Cap. Wait, hold on, I don't have it in front of me. Kaplan Sports Biz.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Kaplan Sports Biz, BIZ. Kaplan with a K. And of course, go read his story here today on what he's heard and what he's reporting about this process and how unusual it is at this point. Dan, I don't know when we talk next in this podcast, we'll be further along or have a deal done, but you know, fingers crossed for all involved. Appreciate the time as always.
All right. Take care.
All right. Joining us here on the podcast, as promised, he is one of the Washington Commanders' newest players, running back Chris Rodriguez, is joining us. Chris, I really appreciate it, man. How's it going since we talked to you on draft night?
It's going pretty good, you know. Pretty much just trying to stay ready. I mean, you know, that time is coming. I don't know what to expect, but, you know, whatever it is, I'll be ready for it.
Right. I mean, the not knowing what to expect is weird, right? Like, I know we've all started a new job. You know, people have, and you, the first day you walk in there, you're like, I don't know where anything is. I don't know who people are. I don't know what's going on. And you have to do this, but you're doing it like in such a fascinating stage where everybody's kind of paying attention. You're not in town right now, correct? Right. We're talking Wednesday. We're talking Wednesday, but you're not here yet.
No, I'm not there yet. I'm still in Lexington right now.
So what's the deal? Like, they tell you, they said, okay, here, we got you the plane ticket. You fly out, yeah. We'll pick you up. Like, has the logistics work?
So all I know is tomorrow I have a flight to Chicago, then Chicago to Washington, and then, you know, I don't know. I guess I get there, somebody picks me up, or I mean, I don't even know where I'm gonna be staying at. Hopefully, it's not too far because I won't have a car or anything. But you know, I feel like it'll all work out in the end. I don't feel like they'll leave me somewhere to, you know, rot or whatever. So,
right. I don't think they'll make you Uber to the facility or anything like that. Doesn't you obviously know Jamin Davis from Kentucky. Doesn't he have like a spare bedroom or something?
Man, if it comes down to it, I hope he does. So, I mean, it'll be good. So hopefully, but you know, we'll figure something out.
Yeah. So it's been a little stark of time here. It's been a couple weeks or thereabouts since the draft, and I, you know, I presume you knew you were going to get drafted at some point, but it did happen. It's a huge moment. And when we talked to you, you know, I think you were still in a bit of a daze, which is understandable. What was it like sort of for you, the 24, 48, 72 hours after that happened? How long did it take you to sort of sink in that this is what's going to happen now you're coming to Washington?
Yeah. Well, for me, I really still don't think it hit me yet. I don't think it will till I get there. I know, like, I feel it, like, it's exciting. It's something I've always wanted to do. But, again, I just don't feel like my family is so excited. And I'm just like, yo, like, calm down. We ain't did nothing yet. Like, I haven't even got there. I haven't even made the team. I haven't done just about anything yet. And, you know, like, you should be excited. I'm like, I am excited. But, you know, it's still work that needs to be done before I can celebrate. So.
Yeah, right. There's like different stages. There's the, wow, I can't believe this is happening to, oh, wait, now I actually have to go do the job and like show them that I'm, you know, that I'm worthy of the time and the investment and all that, all that stuff. So obviously you guys are training, you know, from the time the season ended with Kentucky, you're getting ready for the draft and all these things. You're going pro days and whatever. So you're training there, but like, how do you keep training to get ready for this day? Like, do you do anything different to get ready for rookie camp and then OTAs and things like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's way different from, you know, after season training, because after that, it's after the season is mostly like, you know, training for the 40, little shuttles, just different stuff, you know. You try to cut weight a little bit, you know, just look good or whatever. But after all that's done, said and done, after the draft and everything, it's mostly trying to put back on my muscle mass, you know, lifting those heavy weights and, you know, trying to do more cardio. That's one thing that I've been trying to do more the past week, is cardio, because, you know, when you're training for the 40, it's 40 yards and that's it. So right. You don't do too much. So that's really it, you know, trying to build back muscle mass and cardio is big for me. I feel like all the running back drills that we do, like I'm not going to know what to expect, so I can't practice for it, you know? I can practice footwork and all that stuff, but I won't know till I get there.
Well, I mean, you I guess hypothetically have an inside connection, sort of, because we found out on draft day that you and Antonio Gibson are from the same neck of the woods. I don't know if you had a chance to talk to him or whatever, but obviously, I mean, maybe even Jamin has some idea, I don't know, but have you like had a chance to talk to any of those guys? I assume you've talked to Jamin, but have you had a chance to talk to any of those other guys since you were drafted?
Yeah, so I talked to Gib a few times, actually. Him and Jamin actually sent me pictures of my locker that's there. But yeah, me and Gib, we talked a little bit. Some of it is about football stuff. Some of it's just, you know, like, yeah, I'm ready to get to work. You know, for me, it's I want to learn as much as I can, like, fast. And for me, I know it won't happen that way, but, you know, I feel like I got a good leader ahead of me, and I feel like I gotta listen to him. So it's what I'm looking forward to, just getting there, learning from him, and seeing how it goes.
Where's your I know the running backs are all together when you walk in the locker room. You turn left and then they're on the left side of the room, assuming they've stayed. So are you like next, Antonio, or where are you in the group there?
Nah. So I don't know. It was just a regular like picture. Like it was just my locker.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't know if he was next to me or across from me. I just seen that he just sent a picture, him and Jamin did.
Gotcha. Well, if you are where the running backs are, just be warned. The defensive linemen are right across the room, and they are the loud bunch in the room. And there's a lot of crossfire going on. So just be ready.
Oh, I will.
You know, obviously we're all trying to figure out how do you fit in here with what they want to do, and we're all wondering kind of what Eric Bieniemy's system is going to be. I think you said on draft day that you spoke to Eric. I think you said it was such a whirlwind, you weren't even positive exactly who you were talking to, but I think it was Eric Bieniemy. What have you kind of been able to figure out about him? He's a former running back, of course, now is going to be the offensive coordinator here. He was with the Chiefs. What's your sense of what they're looking for you from you, and what have you kind of gathered from him about what he's expecting?
Yeah, so I haven't really talked to him as much as I talked to Coach Jordan. And for me, I feel like it's just, you know, being that extra guy. You know, I feel like we'll have obviously B-Rob and A-Gib in, but I feel like I can be that adjuster for everybody. You know, when they need a breather or whatever, or it's those ground and pound yards that they need. I feel like sometimes I feel like sometimes I can be at fullback maybe, but who knows? I don't know. But yeah, I feel like Coach Bieniemy, he knows what he's doing. I mean, you've seen the last few years at Kansas City. I feel like he's gonna put the running backs in the best position possible to succeed. And I feel like he'll make it easy on us, but he'll challenge us at some times. So I'm ready for it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're in a unique spot because this is the first time Eric Bieniemy's had a chance to be the flat-out offensive coordinator, play caller, and as a former running back, he surely is going to be interested in what you're doing. So you're going to be one of the first ones to one day tell the world what it was like to be in Eric Bieniemy's first year as a full-blown offensive coordinator. So that'll be interesting for sure. Is there anything else as you're ready to get here that you're kind of excited to see? I mean, so you have not been to the facility yet, right?
No, I have not. I'm excited to see, you know, not even just the facility, but just DC. You know, I've never been to the DMV. I heard it's beautiful. I heard it's expensive, though. But, you know, I don't know. I've never been there, so I can't wait to see for myself. You know, that's one thing I like to do is travel and see new places. So,
yeah. Well, no, sorry. Go ahead.
No, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the hype is real. I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but it's the nation's capital. It's obviously a pretty cool deal. Now, Ashburn is a little bit out into the suburbs, so you know, you probably need somebody to take you there the first time to show you how to get into the city. Yeah. They're also not wrong. It's expensive. This area is not cheap, but hopefully, you know, between the NFL salary, maybe getting an endorsement somewhere, you'll figure some things out. Yeah, for sure. Is there anything in particular with DC? Because obviously there's a lot of monuments and museums or just whatever. Is there anything, one thing in particular that you've kind of been waiting to had in your mind to go see?
Nothing in particular, but I really want to see everything. Like I was going to ask, like, what is something that is like a must-see being in D.C.?
Yeah, I mean, good question. There's so much down there. I mean, if you go to the National Mall, so like whenever there's a rally or a protest or whatever it is, like that's where people essentially congregate, and it stretches. Mm-hmm. It goes from basically the Washington Monument on one end to the U.S. Capitol on the other, and it's really... It's incredible to see it. And there's all the museums are lined up on either side, kind of bookending it. So I'd start there, and the White House isn't far from there and all that stuff. So I'd start there, but you know, I don't know if you're into museums or, you know, there's so much to check out.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I do want to see the White House. Like I know we can't probably get close to it, but
yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I've had fences or gates up because of, you know, whatever's going on in the world at any given moment. But yeah, at a minimum, you can see it. You'll enjoy it. And I imagine the team. I don't know if they'll take you guys on a field trip, but I imagine there'll be probably something to do. Well, before I let you go, just tell me. I'll ask you a couple random questions here, just to get to know you a little bit better. Growing up, did you have like a favorite athlete in any sport, football or otherwise?
Yeah. So I had a favorite football player growing up. A couple of them, honestly. Being from Georgia, you know, Michael Vick was always one of my favorite players. You know, I don't know why I never played quarterback, but you know, you had to be from Georgia to kind of feel that, you know. And then Marshawn Lynch was obviously one of like my role models kind of growing up. Loved the way he played the game. And, you know, that's the reason I wore 24 is because of him. And then, you know, basketball, Carmelo Anthony. I don't know why, but that, I feel like Carmelo is, for me, the GOAT.
So, really? Not just your favorite player, but he is the GOAT.
Yeah, I feel it. Carmelo's the GOAT.
Were you a Knicks fan or just a Carmelo fan?
I would not really a Knicks fan, just a Melo fan. Yeah, I mean, growing up, my dad was from New York growing up. So I mean, we watched the Knicks, but then you know, Carmelo just kind of was that guy for me. Like yeah. I would always use Carmelo because he's the best. So
I mean, he, you know, there's a few guys in the ever who played who could score like he can. He's not. You'll hear the term the DMV a lot, meaning the District, Maryland, and Virginia as like sort of the fan base. Now, we don't really count Baltimore, but Carmelo Anthony is from Baltimore. So like, if you want to very, 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 very loosely include him you could, but yeah. he's not from he's not the fan base, but Baltimore's, you know, close enough, I guess, sort of.
Yeah.
So you got that going for you. What's this is a weird question I was asking people. What's a skill or a habit or a hobby that you have that you would be like a Hall of Famer in? Like, I mean, like some people would say like they're really good at making a steak. Some people might say they are the best at ping pong. I don't know, whatever it is. What's the thing for you that like, you know, you think I have this really good skill at anything?
That's a good question. I have to think about that and get back to you. Let me think about it a little bit. I don't know.
Well, you said you play Michael Vick when you play. Did you play Michael Vick when you play on Madden?
No. So I didn't really play Madden like that. My brother was always like Halo, Call of Duty. And whenever we would play Madden, he would always like turn the game off. So we never really played Madden. But we would always play like Call of Duty. So those are the games that kind of stuck with me. I'm in a mix of like Call of Duty and Fortnite. So those are really the only two I play. Even though I play the game a lot, but those are the only two that I really play. At the NFLPA, Call of Duty actually came out and they had like a little event tournament type thing. And it was like whoever gets the most kills, you win like $10,000 or whatever. And it was wild. But
who won?
Darren Kennard won. He was actually at Kentucky, not last year, but the year before, 21. But yeah, so I was the only rookie up there for a minute. You know, it was Darren Kennard, Sauce Gardner, and then me, and then two other people. But when I left, I think I had dropped to fifth because people had kept playing. But yeah, I was in fifth out of everybody that was at the draft. So felt pretty good about it, but felt like I should have.
All right. Well, we'll put that down as your special skill, because it sounds like you're pretty good at that. And you might have even had a chance to win if you know you didn't have to if you could have stayed there as long as these other guys did. The last question. I don't know if you set goals for yourself going into a season. Obviously, this is different than college, but do you have, maybe it's too early, but like, do you have that, or will you think you'll eventually set some goals, or what would you, you know, what do you kind of think those goals might be?
Yeah, so I only have a few goals right now. I mean, I have some in place, but you know, my goals are, you know, they're small. They're like micro goals to help me achieve bigger goals. So for me, my first goal is to make the team. That's my first goal. Make the team. Second goal is to help the team win in any way, whether it's special teams, offense, whatever. And then third goal obviously is to play on offense. But you know, those are just my starter goals. Once those goals are achieved, then I'll have to set new ones, and probably, you know, be like yards and touchdowns or whatnot. But first, I'm gonna have to focus on making the team.
I mean, I think that's, you know, don't put the cart before the horse, as they say. So makes sense to me. All right, Chris, I really appreciate the time, and I'm sure everybody appreciates getting to know you a little bit better. You are at CROD_JR on Twitter. Twitter is what I pay attention to for social media. You have other social media that you want people to know of that to follow you on?
Well, yeah, just Twitter and Instagram is really the only main two that I use.
I thought everybody under 25 by law had to be on TikTok. That's not true.
TikTok is like a black hole, man. You get on TikTok, you'll be scrolling forever. So I was like, you know what? I'm about to just delete it. So I deleted it. I have an account. But nah, I don't really log into it really. Mainly on Twitter. Twitter videos are funnier anyways. So stay on Twitter.
All right. Instagram. Deal. I like it. Chris, man, I really appreciate it. We'll see you out there in a couple of days.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.